So let your colors run tonight. We're painting in the dark. Let your colors run tonight. The colors of your heart.
Hey there, and welcome to the Catchy Lefty podcast. My name is Patrick Engel, and I'm joined today by Chris Patton and Jen Chapman. Today, we are going to be looking at and discussing Epiphany number 3, so the third Sunday after Epiphany, and we're going to be talking on the New Testament text, which today is 1 Corinthians 12, verses 12 through 31a. Jen went to let her dog out before he barked at her, and Chris should still be there. How are you, Chris?
I am doing well today. How are you?
I am also doing well. I am in Divide, Colorado this morning, so I am literally in the center of the Continental Divide, getting ready to assess some ordination candidates for my Nazarene district here in Colorado.
So is it considered irony that we're going to read a text about being one and you're in a town called Divide?
Divide? Hey, I didn't think about that, but it probably is interesting. Jen, are you back?
I'm back.
Cool. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Yeah.
Nice. Well, let's just jump right into the text. I'll just read it. It's a long passage. But it's definitely worth the read. And it goes into it is the conclusion of the text that we read last week, beginning at the verse 1 of chapter 12. And then this leads into the text for Epiphany 4, which is 1 Corinthians 13. So I'll just start reading at verse 12. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in the one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and we were all made to drink of one Spirit. Indeed, the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot would say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear would say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would that hearing be? And if the whole body were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But as it is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them as he chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many members, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the members of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And those members of the body that we think less honorable, we clothe with greater honor, and our less respectable members are treated with greater respect. Whereas our more respectable members do not need this. But God has so arranged the body, giving the greater honor to the inferior member, that there may be no dissension within the body, but the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together with it. And if one member is honored, all rejoice together with it. Now you are the body of Christ, and individually members of it. And God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then deeds of power, then gifts of healing, forms of assistance, forms of leadership, various kinds of tongues. Are all apostles? Are all prophets? Are all teachers? Do all work miracles? Do all possess gifts of healing? Do all speak in tongues? Do all interpret? But strive for the greater gifts, and I will show you still a more excellent way. So there we have it. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 12 through 31a. I have to clarify that Jonathan Spring did not edit my comment last week about lesser parts of the body, and I do apologize that made it on air. So I will try to keep my remarks cleaner than they were last week.
Yeah, keep it G.
Seriously.
Come on, Patrick.
No need for that. I really was hoping that he was going to edit it, but he did not.
Who had time for that?
Who has time for that? Here we are. We're talking about the body and the way that all of it is necessary. So what are your guys' kind of initial thoughts on this passage?
So one of the things I read in Feasting on the Word commentary talked about that the body is not a uncommon way of talking about a group of people, but that it's usually used to keep the people at the bottom in line. So like you're supposed to be this part. And Paul takes that image that's not uncommon, but he turns it on its head and lifts up those so-called lesser parts. So I thought it's really interesting that he's using a common metaphor for a group of people, but he's turning it on its head as he works through that metaphor.
Yeah, instead of using it as like a hierarchical metaphor, he's using it as more of like an inclusive metaphor that everything is important for this body to function.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was also interesting, just the way that he uses it as that way, but then he goes in into like verse 27 and he talks about like first apostles and second prophets and third teachers, but then he still lists them even though he's trying to make it sound like everybody's necessary. That was kind of confusing for me actually when I was reading.
I thought that was interesting too, because other parts of 1 Corinthians, you kind of get the idea that speaking in various kinds of tongues is something that they value very highly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He puts it at the end of the list. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's the same as what you were saying before, that's just another way that he's flipping it upside down, because I think that the like forms of leadership is right before that. And I think that maybe it was the leaders of the church and these people who had this gift of tongues that thought they were all that, the ones with the special gifts. And so he's like, wait a second, y'all need to calm down because you're kind of last in line here.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's a good insight, that he's putting them in their place, that like, even though you think speaking in tongues is great, it's really not.
Yeah,
and then he commends us to strive for something even greater, and we'll get into that next week when we talk about 1 Corinthians 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this passage is primarily, like, it's about unity in the midst of our differences, and that everything that we have is important, which I think is really actually, like, for me in my context, that's really, really important and really, really good for us to hear, because I'm still striving and working at like communicating to the people that I pastor with that all of us have something to contribute, and that like what we give is just as important as what we receive, and I just like even on a greater like on a greater scale in North America, a lot of us. Like, in all honesty, the major expression of our faith is still kind of consumerism. It's still based upon how we, like, what we get out of Sunday morning. And I think this passage has the opportunity to speak to that mindset and say it's not necessarily even about what you get, but it's about what you give and how you participate in the larger context of the body.
I think that this text is very difficult, and we talked about this last week on the podcast, for people who are in leadership, because especially within the consumeristic mindset, we kind of have a hierarchy in the American evangelical church. Pastors are more important. People who maybe are on the worship team or up front, they get lots of play. And so it's a very challenging text because it very much turns that kind of stuff up on its head. And we're kind of the people who, given the roles we have, I don't know that we personally struggle with it, but I think our roles are very much a part of that struggle these days in the American church. So it's a really interesting text in that context.
Yeah, well, and I was thinking, like, along that lines, that even even in the context that we've been talking about, how the people up front usually are honored more than the people who are not, we still even, like, a common way of talking about pastoring is that, you know, you're separated from the community. Like, as a pastor, you're not necessarily a part of the community, but you're set apart from the community. And I hear regularly how pastors say, well, you know, we have to be authentic and honest, but we can't be openly vulnerable with our people because they hold us in a different, they hold us in a different light, or they look at us differently. And part of what I am wanting to argue in my life and in my ministry is that the only way that we can truly be effective pastors in our new paradigm is by being vulnerable. And that to be authentic means that we have to embrace the community wholeheartedly, and our people have to do the same. And that's, I think that's a major fear for all of us, is to be vulnerable. I mean, from the least to the greatest, if there is such a thing, in our congregations, is how do we want to participate, but we want to participate in such a way where we won't get hurt, or where we won't get critiqued, or where we won't get judged. And honestly, like, I think this passage calls us to open ourselves up to name that fear, that we're afraid of being vulnerable, but then to turn it into our desire, that we desire to be so intimate with one another, that we know each other's weaknesses and strengths, and we participate in it anyway, because we're participating in this out of the call of Christ and the unity of the Spirit type of thing.
Yeah. So I have some thoughts, but they're kind of the opposite. You kind of pulled it into, like, the local church paradigm, and I want to pull it out to, like, the full church paradigm. The idea that if one member suffers, all suffer together with it. One member's honored, all rejoice together with it. You know, I think of with Martin Luther King Jr. Day, will be the Monday of this. The Sunday will be after it. But, you know, just thinking about the continued racial struggles in our country and, you know, struggles around the world, remembering that we are part of this one body that extends to every culture and race and country. And so kind of seeing those as our brothers and sisters and suffering with them and rejoicing with them, I think is another way that we can take this.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more on, like, how like, suggestions on how we can do that? I mean, as a whole, because it's no, I guess, like, in the Nazarene context, at least, most of our congregations are pretty much, I can't think of the word. We all kind of look the same.
Like, the culturally the same, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, so how do we do exactly what you just said? How do we pull it into the larger context that, like, we still have racial issues in America? We still are, I mean, we need to suffer with our immigrant friends that are seeking refuge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, and I heard this really cool story that in West Texas, the West Texas District Church of the Nazarene, like, they are housing, I think, like, 200 illegal immigrants right now.
Yeah, they're boys. They're all boys, and they're refugees.
And they're yeah, like, that's pretty sweet. I mean, that's a good example of how we suffer with one another, in that context. But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One thing. So my church is a little bit odd because we, like, planted ourselves missionally in a neighborhood that's very different culturally than the people who started the church. So we kind of have a cultural diversity built into our model. But for a traditional church that, you know, happens to be in a neighborhood where people are mostly of one culture, there's a couple churches in our neighborhood that the pastors, one is a, your typical like upper middle class white congregation, pretty large church, and then the other one is a predominantly black congregation, and the pastors have befriended each other, and they, I think they like go to lunch or coffee pretty regularly, and then the congregations, I'm not sure if it's once a month or once a quarter, but they do things together intentionally, and try to build relationships with one another, and I think that that's a really great way to foster that kind of relationality and understanding each other as brothers and sisters and part of the body.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Great. This is, I really think this text is good. I hate to cut us short, but I gotta keep moving on. I think one of the last points that is, it's subtle in this passage, but you should probably bring out if you're gonna preach it. Is that unity is not something that we do, but it's actually a gift of the Holy Spirit. As I was reading this passage, like it's still intimately connected to the first part of chapter 12. And we have to realize that like for all these gifts, they fall under the unity gift. And so the temptation, especially if you are more of a pastor than anything else in your preaching style, is to seek harmony and almost to even like downplay the conflict that goes on within our congregations, or maybe even on a larger scale. Like for some of us, it really is hard to kind of speak about the racial tensions in America, especially if you live in an area where those racial tensions are very strong. Or it may be hard to talk about the political issues that are going on and that are polarizing the people in our congregations. And so we want to kind of like hide it. We want to cover those disrespectful parts of our body, or what we think are shameful parts of our body. But if we're truly a people seeking Christ and living in the Spirit, then it's an opportunity for us to not just like create some sort of false peace or harmony, but to really embrace our diversities, to name the challenges that are before us, so that we can pray for unity and seek that gift. Right? Do you think that that's present in this text? Sorry, I stated it more as like, what the text says.
Absolutely. But it made me think too about, you know, just the divisions among Christians. You know, you've got your conservative Christians and your liberal Christians and your social justice Christians and your, you know, whatever else. But, you know, I think a lot of times we want to cut off certain parts of the body and say, I have no need of you.
Yeah.
So I think that that's another really important part of this.
One of the things going on right now, which my headphones fell out, so you may have mentioned it, is the division in the Anglican Communion, the global Anglican Communion right now.
Right, and, like between the Episcopalians and the Anglicans and the head Anglicans, yeah.
And I've been reading some of the blogs or letters that are being written by the bishops who are censoring the Episcopal Church, and the amount of glee that they have at what they're doing.
Right.
Is making me like almost physically nauseous.
Yeah.
Because it speaks against the kind of stuff that we're talking about here in all levels. It's just, it's awful. Hmm. And it can't be spirit led. Well, I shouldn't say that. I my opinion is.
You're really struggling to see the spirit in it.
There, thank you, Jen.
Yeah.
That's much better.
Isn't that, like, I am right there with you. Like, so it's no secret that I probably have some views and perspectives that are maybe contradictory to, like, even the Church of the Nazarenes, you know, code of character Christian conduct or whatever that section is in the manual. But at the same time, I want to validate people who have held those beliefs and who are probably still more quote unquote like traditional in their view and in their understanding of life and culture and what it means to be operating as a Christian. But at the same time, like, how do we function in a church society where we're the ones being marginalized in this sense? Because I think our gut reaction and maybe even our fallen nature wants us to marginalize and isolate them back. Right?
Yeah. Right.
So then how does this speak to those contexts where we want to be a part of the community, but we feel like our voice isn't being welcomed?
That's tough.
That is tough. I think, though, like you said, our reaction is, you know, of course there's that common, we'll just wait till all those, you know, old high up Nazarenes in leadership die off.
Right.
Yeah. and then we can do it our way. But that's not maybe valuing them and what they have to offer. So maybe we need to work on our appreciation of them and their wisdom and what they bring to the table, what they bring to the body, and be patient in wanting to use our gifts of whatever knowledge or wisdom we think we might have.
Yeah. Oh man. So it's just like a call to even like more humility.
Yeah. I think so. I know, right?
Who would have thought this text would be so hard?
I'm getting uncomfortable. Can we end this podcast?
Yes. Yes, we can. Thanks for joining us today with Catchy Lecty. We look forward to just hearing your thoughts. So as always, if you have insights into this text and you'd like to share it, check out our webpage, catchylecty.com, or our Facebook page. If you'd like to participate and join in on the conversations, all of you are more than welcome. We'd love to hear what you have to say, and we will pray that you'll be speaking in love and in truth, and with grace and with peace. So today we leave you. Thanks for joining us.